And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Preacher of Providence, is written by Peter Lyon and is presented as part of the national observance of Bill of Rights Day.
Mr. Williams, grave and weighty charges have been lodged against you. You stand accused of heretical and dangerous opinions, of resisting the authority of the magistrates, and even of presuming to admonish them for their efforts to maintain their authority, and of stirring up the people to take your side in this contempt of properly constituted authority. How say you, Mr. Williams? Do you persist?
Governor, I prayed for guidance last night, and I studied the dictates of my conscience. These are my tenets. The best church is a free church in a free state. When a state makes it a crime for a man humbly and peaceably to question laws and statutes or whatever is publicly taught and delivered, then that state will find itself in chains, imprisoned by a jailer which is ignorant. For months, Governor, you and your associates have hounded me, attacked me and persecuted me for my honest and peaceful religious beliefs. Your persecution is most bloody, black, and foul. I stand by my belief.
Whereas Mr. Roger Williams hath broached and divulged divers new and dangerous opinions against the authority of magistrates, hath also writ letters of defamation, both of the magistrates and churches here, and that too before any conviction, and yet maintaineth the same without retraction, it is therefore ordered that the said Mr. Williams shall depart out of this jurisdiction and be banished.
October 9, 1635. On that day, Roger Williams, preacher of Salem, was banished by the oligarchy ruling the Massachusetts Bay Colony for dangerous opinions against the authority of magistrates.
It's persecution, that's what it is.
What have you got to laugh at?
I was just thinking. Thinking how they call this town Salem.
So?
Salem comes from an ancient Hebrew word, shalom, which means peace.
Well, there'll be no peace in this Salem for a long time, and you can lay to that. Most bloody, black, and foul, just as Roger Williams called it.
Anyway, they gave him 6 weeks of grace before he's got to leave the colony.
What less could they do?
They daren't do any less.
Man just up from his sickbed, his wife just before bearing her second baby. They wouldn't have dared give him less than 6 weeks.
What? Say, they better give him more than 6 weeks. In 6 weeks, it's December, winter. Where's he to go?
Plymouth. He could go back to Plymouth.
Don't think it. If he's banished from our colony, those magistrates will see to it that Plymouth don't let him in.
Don't let him in, but if they don't...
Don't worry, man. They're bound to give him more time. They know that half this town would follow him. There's that many ready to go into exile with him right now. Hey, men!
Right. I go with him.
And I.
You watch. They'll give him at least till spring.
They did as much for that villain Ratcliffe, didn't they? And him a criminal. Yeah. And what law did Roger Williams ever break except speak his mind?
Aye.
It looks like that's breaking a law around here these days.
Speak your conscience these days. That's dangerous, all right.
Persecution.
There he goes now.
We're with you, Minister.
That was how to talk to a minister.
Thank you, my friend.
Stick to your guns, Minister, and we'll stick to you. Hooray! Hooray! Hooray!
But fanaticism triumphed, and freedom of conscience was stifled, and the magistrates, the governor, and the Puritan clergy returned to Boston. And the leaves fell and the wind grew sharp. In the later end of October, Mary Williams bore her second baby, a girl. And she was called Freeborn as a pledge to the future. Then came word from Boston, from Governor Haynes.
Roger Williams is granted leave to stay in his home until spring.
For the voices lifted in protest against the sentence of banishment had not been stilled. Then the snow fell heavily over the countryside and blanketed the wilderness in white. And in Boston, a man came privily to the general court to make a secret report.
All right, go on. What else?
You commanded him not to go about to draw others to his opinions.
That's right.
And has he been? Has he been spreading his heretical ideas? For if he has, no matter what the weather,
he... One thing at a time, Mr. Cotton. Let him finish, please. Go on.
Well, it's not true that he does go about spreading his opinion, Your Honors and Gentlemen. Not exactly go about, he doesn't know.
What do you mean? What are you trying to say?
Well, you see, Your Honors and Gentlemen, the thing of it is, there's a parcel of them in Salem that still think this Williams was right all along. Ain't changed their minds any, they haven't.
Well, speak up, man. What's he doing?
Well, I'm telling you, ain't I? He doesn't go about. They come to him. That's the thing of it.
Mr. Winthrop.
Do I understand you correctly, sir, to say that Williams continues to preach in his own home?
He was bidden not to. Most sternly, we ordered him not to.
He entertains company in his house, he does, and he preaches to them, even on the points for which, Your Honors and Gentlemen, you so rightly censured him last October.
That's enough. That's it. He's disobeyed us.
Mr. Cotton, if I may interpose.
Hmm?
From a legal standpoint, he has not disobeyed us. Our commands were that he not go about to draw others to his opinion. He seemed to be obeying the letter of our injunction.
My dear Mr. Winthrop, you deal with this snake of heresy with entirely too much clemency. Why, what would you? That he break up our churches into a dozen different warring sects and persuasions?
There's many in Salem as separated from the church, especially the women. Devout women, too.
You see, Mr. Winthrop, Governor, I appeal to you.
Yes, of course.
Spreading the leaven of his corrupt imagination. He must be banished at once.
Oh, come now. You can't send him away in dead of winter.
And which is worse? Letting him stay to breed a winter's spiritual plague in the colony? Or inviting him to take a winter's journey out of it?
There's a ship sailing in 10 days for England.
Issue a warrant for his arrest.
He's making a new church up there in Salem. That's what he's doing. Making a new church right in his own home.
All right. That's enough. Where's the marshal?
Here, Governor.
Have a warrant made out for Williams' arrest, Mr. Penn. You're to go north to Salem yourself. Make plans to leave at once.
Yes, sir.
You're to bring him back to be placed aboard ship for England.
Yes, sir.
He's a sick man still, Governor.
Mr. Winthrop, if he dies, his blood is on his own head.
Two days' hard riding brought Marshal James Penn from Boston to Salem. At nightfall, he stabled his horse, found lodging, and shivering with cold, he headed straight for the tavern, a roaring fire, and his 3 ounces of whiskey at the tavern bar.
I needed that.
In from Boston, are you?
Aye, with a warrant for the arrest of that man, Williams.
Williams? You mean the minister?
That's my man. He's ordered to sail from Boston in 8 days. I've the warrant right here in my jacket. Which way is his house?
His house. I'll point it out to you directly. But you're cold, man. Have another on the house first. Then do your business. No sense freezing first now, is there?
Well, now, I thank you kindly.
Johnny, run quick to Parsons. One of the marshals come for him, quick.
Hello?
James Penn at your service, ma'am. I'm here to...
There's sickness in this house.
Oh, sorry, ma'am, I'm sure. I've a warrant here for the arrest of Roger Williams. Would you ask him to...
It's my husband, Roger Williams, who's sick. Bad sick. Not even conscious, and the doctor just this moment left. And he's not to be disturbed under any
circumstances. But I've come to arrest him.
Nonsense. You can't arrest a man who may be dying. Don't talk to me, who may be his widow tomorrow that way.
But, ma'am...
Come in here with me. And walk soft now, and don't say a word. I'll let you just have a peek at him. You'll see for yourself whether or not you can go about arresting him. Follow me now. And mind you, don't say a word, not even a whisper. He's asleep and mustn't be awakened.
What's his trouble?
The doctor thinks it may be the pox.
The pox? I mean, the pox. Which way is the door, ma'am?
Right there. Close it gently behind you, Marshal. Now get up. Get out of that bed, Roger Williams, or I may die myself of laughing.
Telling him it was the pox. Now, that was inspired, darling.
Now, Roger, wait. Let's see now. 2 days for the marshal to get back to Boston, and say a day for the magistrates to realize they were hoodwinked. 2 days more for the next marshal to get up here.
Yeah, that's 5 days.
That's the most. Maybe better figure only four. 4 days to make your... plans. Pack your things.
Oh, my sweet love, come now.
It's you I'm thinking of, Roger. What of you out in the wilderness in the dead of winter?
Better than in the jail of the persecutors for nothing except my dangerous thoughts on God and his creation.
Oh, Roger.
Come now, Mary. Think of Marshal Penn. Think of John Cotton's face when he learns of how he's been tricked. That's a sight to keep me warm next week in the snows.
Marshal's a fool.
But surely if Williams is confined to his bed...
They hoodwinked the marshal. Williams is as well as you or I, laughing at us right now, I warrant, up there in Salem. You saw the letter I received in which it was reported Williams was in good health.
If this was a trick played on Marshal Payne, we must deal with it promptly.
Quite right, Governor. It's more of the same contempt for authority, and it must be stopped.
I'll send Captain Underhill to Salem with 10 men.
Good.
I don't think they'll find it so easy to trick Underhill.
Nor so easy to keep spreading their ideas about freedom of conscience. This is the house, right enough. Open up there in the name of the king.
All right, then. Kick it in, George.
Yes, sir.
Hello? Williams?
Beggar's hiding somewhere.
A couple of townsfolk outside, Captain. They might know where he is.
Oh, good idea.
Hey, you there! Where's Roger Williams?
Who?
Ah. Hey, you! You then! Aren't you the man that told us this was Williams' house?
That's right, Captain.
Well, where is he?
Oh, he left town 3 days ago, Captain. Huh? I don't know where he is by now.
Why didn't you tell us that before?
Well, you never asked me, Captain.
Roger Williams' friends in Salem might laugh at the failure of the doughty Captain Underhill, but the preacher himself faced hardships that were no laughing matter. Where was he? Somewhere south and west of Salem, in the wilderness, hip deep in the winter snows, following no trail but moving by compass, his pack on his back, his clothes stiff and wet and frozen, sometimes not daring even to light a campfire. A 17th century displaced person, fugitive, hunted, weary, cold and hungry, all alone with only his convictions and his reliance on freedom to sustain him, fearful that each man's hand was turned against him, avoiding the fringe of pioneer settlements. At last, after many days of flight, stumbling with exhaustion, pitching face forward into the snow.
Hello!
And now, sitting up, watching, as two Indians approach, wondering, are they friendly?
You are hurt?
I'm just tired. I'm a friend. A friend to all the Wampanoags. Are you of the Wampanoag tribe?
Yes.
Can you walk?
Yes, if you know the shortest way to Soams.
We take you to Sachem, to Massasoit. Come.
You follow. We lead. I carry your pack.
No, that's all right.
I carry your pack. You come already 22-day journey. Too long.
How did you know that I've been traveling that long?
Massasoit hear it. We hear it. We hear white teacher, speaker, come south to Soam. Big man, sachem among English, thrown out by them, come to join us.
You follow. We lead.
He followed them to Soams, to what is now Rehoboth, to their sachem, Massasoit, the wise Indian leader. Massasoit had long since made his peace with the intruding English. He gave a place by the fire and the hand of friendship to the fugitive.
Ah, fire is good. I'm cold to the inside of my bones.
It will pass, my friend.
The cold may pass, Massasoit. About my gratitude to you.
When I was sick, an Englishman came to cure me. I have not forgotten.
Oh, yes. John Winthrop.
Yes. A friend of yours?
He was once my friend.
Huh? You mean he joined the others in driving you from your home?
That's right.
You will tell me why?
They ordered me to worship my god, Massasoit, in the way they wanted me to worship him. They bid me agree to think as they think.
Every man thinks.
Oh, it was a very complicated argument over many things, some small, some very important to me.
How can one man bid another what to think? A complicated argument is a hard thing to follow. But one thing is easy to understand. Every man thinks. Some one way, some another. But if one man thinks he can insist that all men think as he does, then he is a fool.
Yes. I agree, Massasoit.
And this fool should be driven into the wilderness. Not you.
February, March, April. The snows melted and the green buds appeared. And all this while, Williams was living with the Indians, learning their tongue and their ways, building a friendship with them, which later would be of much value when he would prove to be the only one able to keep the Indians from border wars against the colonists. In mid-April, Williams was joined by four companions, Harris and Angel from Salem, Smith and Weeks from Dorchester, and they planned.
You know the country south of here, Minister.
Pretty well, I should hope, after these last weeks.
I was talking to a trader, John Oldham.
Oh, yes, I've met him.
He says there's a fine bay to the south and west of here.
The Bay of the Narragansetts.
Are there many of them?
On the west shore of the bay, yes.
Narragansetts, eh? I don't like the sound of that.
No need to fear, Harris. They know me and get along with me. With me and my friends.
It'll have to be a pretty fair-sized location.
Right, with William Arnold coming and his whole family.
His son-in-law, too, Carpenter?
And John Green and Joshua Verrin promised he'd be
John bringing... Throckmorton, too.
And not forgetting your own family, Minister.
Thank God.
Ah, it's good it is. My hands are itching for the feel of the axe to chop down a clearing. And a hoe and a mattock to dig up some good rich loam.
In free air.
Yes. You know how glad I am to have you all join me.
Where'll it be, Minister? You name the spot.
I've had my eye on some land that would make a fine plantation just at the northern tip of the bay. The Indians call the place about there Seekonk, and I've sounded out their sachem. I think he'd sell us land.
Sell? You mean you want to buy the land?
You mean you want to just take it, Brother Harris?
Well, under the king's patent, we just...
Let land be taken from the Indians under the name of the king. We want to live at peace and in friendship with the Narragansetts.
Yes. You're right, Minister. Of course.
For we must have peace if we are to find the freedom we have all left our homes for.
A find a good place for a plantation. You buy the land, then you clear it. Hard work. You build yourself and your friends some log cabins, and that's not easy either. Comes the day when you break ground for planting, a good day. And then the day when you finish planting your first crop. Maybe, like Roger Williams, on this day you stand for a moment, wiping the sweat out of your eyes, and look around with satisfaction. It was at some such moment that a messenger arrived from Plymouth, bringing Williams a letter from the governor, Winslow.
Minister, what is it?
He says our plantation is just within the boundaries of Plymouth Colony.
But
sends his love and respect to me and to all of you.
Let him keep it.
And gives it as his gentle advice that we should move out west, just across the bay, he says.
What is this gentle advice?
Well, I'm afraid, Tom, that when he writes with gentle advice, he is telling us to go.
But how can he?
We are inside the bounds of his colony, Tom.
But you were never banished from Plymouth, only from Massachusetts Bay.
I think perhaps that those in Plymouth are being forced to do this by Haynes and Cotton in Boston.
Look here. If we move across the bay, across to the west bank there, tell me this. Will those men in Boston, those squires and magistrates, will they ever, ever, ever be able to tell us what to do again?
I guess they'll try, Tom.
But they'll have no legal right. Isn't that so?
That's so.
Then let's move.
Buying the land here, our first crop, our cabins, all nothing.
I say let's move then. Come on. We have the country free before us. We can find our freedom.
Preacher Roger Williams and his followers, they numbered maybe two dozen by now, headed once more westward. West across the Seekonk River, west to where two little rivers met. The Indians told them one was called Moshassic, the other the Wanasketucket.
The big hill here will protect us from the cold.
I like it.
Look at this soil. Rich and black.
Yes. It's a good place.
What did their sachem say, Minister?
Oh, he'll sell. And at our price.
Then this is it. What's it called around here?
It has no name, Tom. Not in the Indian tongue.
Call it home. That's good enough. Home. That's what it's going to be for us, sure enough.
I say let's call it Providence.
Providence.
And in God's providence, may we find here the right to live and pray and worship as we each of us deems right.
Right, Minister.
Amen.
We are agreed that we make our homes and our plantations here?
Yes. Yes.
Then let us all agree on one further thing. And one of us shall write it down as a covenant, and all of us to sign it. An order which we will agree to respect. That no man shall be molested for his conscience, nor any woman either.
Amen.
That we all dedicate ourselves to that grand cause of truth and freedom of conscience.
Amen.
And this providence, we shall make a shelter for all persons whomsoever who are distressed for conscience, and a shelter for such as are destitute.
Amen.
Sixteen 1636. Roger Williams, apostle of freedom, persecuted for conscience, preacher of providence, led his flock to the first settlement of the New World, dedicated to freedom of religion.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Benjamin J. Swig, prominent civic leader of San Francisco, member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary, and a member of the Board of Directors of the University of Judaism in Los Angeles. Mr. Swig.
As a proud American and as a native New Englander, sharing the precious heritage of Roger Williams, I share with all my countrymen and our appreciation of the well-deserved tribute just paid to this great patriot. As nationals of a great democracy, through the United Nations, we must rededicate ourselves to the principle of not only the sovereignty of nations, but also of the dignity of the individual. Individually as citizens of communities and through a diversity of organizations, we must strive to preserve the principles which guided Roger Williams. In our beloved San Francisco, we are blessed with a spirit of brotherhood, amity, and understanding that makes our city a bright spot, one of the brightest in terms of good American group relations. Enunciating the principles of democracy is not enough. It is our responsibility to see that in deed and in word, every day of every year, we live true to the principles of freedom, justice, and equality. It is for us to recognize that our rights have no more priority than those of our neighbor, and that the weakening of the rights of any human means a corresponding weakening of our own. To this task, San Franciscans of every religion, race, and national origin are dedicated, and I am proud to say that we of the Jewish community of San Francisco, a community as old as San Francisco itself, a century old, are playing our part. Today, the Jewish community of San Francisco is celebrating a memorable occasion, the 100th anniversary of the Jewish Family Service Agency and the 25th anniversary of the Jewish Welfare Fund. These two great organizations are living examples of our contribution to the better health and citizenship of our community, as well as to the preservation of human dignity and the alleviation of homelessness and human misery wherever it may be. Freedom and equality are our precious heritage. We must not and shall not forsake it.
Thank you, Mr. Swig. Our Eternal Light drama today, Preacher of Providence, was written by Peter Lyon. It was presented as part of the national observance of Bill of Rights Day. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured were Norman Rose as Roger Williams, Charlotte Holland as Mary, and Cameron Prudhomme as the narrator. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.